Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Next case on our calendar is A18-0637, Twin Town Properties LLC versus Mark Janavaris. Is that correct?
It's Janavaris.
Janavaris. Thank you. Counsel for appellant, you will have, just one person arguing, correct? Okay. You'll have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent, and then you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you so choose to use that time. When you approach the podium, please state your name for the record and the party or parties you're representing. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning. My name is Daniel Kennedy. I'm here with co-counsel Michael Kane. We represent Marcos Janavaris, also known as Mark Janavaris. I'm going to address some highlights of the trial. Not every claim, because time is limited. Starting with the statutory claim under Minnesota Statute 504B.271, which has very limited requirements. There must be a single written demand for access to property that the tenant does not have, that either remains in the premises or if the landlord moved it to wherever the landlord moved it to. So a single written demand, and that must be delivered to the landlord or a representative of the landlord. That's what the tenant must do. The landlord, upon receipt of that, must make access available within 24 hours. More if it, 48 hours if it's stored somewhere else, but this was all stored on site, so it's 24 hours for this case. On four separate occasions, notice was sent to the landlord through the landlord's attorney. August 26th, 2016 was my first communication demanding access. It made a reasonable demand that you would expect given the volume of the inventory in the premises. And that reasonable demand was that we'd like to know a few days in advance that we were going to be able to get access so that we could line up trucks and line up labor in order to move this property. Access was never provided. That demand was never withdrawn. In fact, on August 30th, I sent another communication asking for access.
Well, can I stop you there? Because we've read this, and we're really well aware of the facts. Are you claiming some of the findings that the district court met that found here are clearly erroneous?
Yes.
And if so, could you specifically point to the findings that you believe are clearly erroneous
on that
affect
first,
the disposition of this case?
Yes, Judge Wooden. On that first particular demand, the judge looked at some language in an email saying, still talking about the need to get access to withdraw the inventory, but also saying that my client, Mr. Janavaris, had talked with the landlord, and they had talked about this idea of extending the lease. It was not, however, a withdrawal of that demand. It was finding out what their position would be on that. And that was right around the time of the August 26th and August 30th. The judge in the district court felt that that was somehow either withdrawing or watering down that demand. However, right after that, there was another demand, if there were any doubt, for that continued the continuing demand for withdrawal of the inventory.
Well, counsel, on August 29th, didn't Twin Town ask for assurance that all of the property would be removed from the premises on August 31st, and no assurance was provided? Are you disputing that?
I am disputing. What I stated was that everything would be withdrawn, but I said there have also been discussions of there being an extension of the lease. My client would sell items for a number of months, and then the landlord could have whatever was left. That's what they were discussing or what my client had proposed, but that was not saying we would not take everything out. And, Your Honor,
but there was no assurance given that the the property would be removed at the end of August, correct? By your client?
Yes, there was. That's what we were asking for. And that's what I stated. And even if I had not stated it, Your Honor, it doesn't matter.
Well, I've looked closely at the record. Can you tell me where you stated that? Where in the record I would find that?
That's in email communications.
Is there an exhibit number?
Yes, this is exhibit 107. An email communication from me dated August 29th. The second line of which is, but my client does intend to remove it all.
But does it give the date by which it would all be removed? Does it confirm that it would be all removed by the end of August?
Yes, this is a response in part of that email chain about removal on August 31st.
But does it explicitly say in that email that the property would be removed by August 31st? My recollection is there's nothing indicating the date by which it would. And in fact, later communications indicate that more time was needed to, it couldn't happen in just a day.
That's absolutely true. But there is no requirement that the tenant be able to remove it all in one day. With this volume of merchandise, there was simply no way. That does not mean that the tenant cannot remove their property.
Right, but my concern is you made it sound like your client was going to be able to remove it by the end of August, but as indicated in that email communication, but there's nothing indicating when the property would be removed, by what date it would be removed by.
No. Okay. It was gaining access on the 31st so that we could start removal until we got it all out. There was no statement as to this is how long it's going to take. Just looking at the volume, you knew it was going to take more than one day.
But wasn't the understanding, though, when when the lease was extended for an additional 6 months, that your client would be removing that property and getting rid of the property during that six-month period, and that's why they gave them the 6 months?
That was certainly the landlord's intention.
All right.
My client said that he was moving in that direction. He wasn't going to run the store forever. But he was also attempting to negotiate an extension of the lease.
Okay, but wasn't that the understanding, though, that at the expiration of the lease, it was expected that his property would be removed?
The landlord may have had that expectation.
Wasn't that provided for in the lease, that one, at the end of the term of the lease, the property is abandoned? And there was a requirement to remove the property prior to the end of the lease?
In the lease, there is an abandonment clause, but the statute specifically states that the tenant can have access to that, and that.
Right. I agree that that's what the statute provides. I'm just trying to understand, you were talking about your client's intent. So when your client signed the lease, I would assume your client's intent was consistent with the terms of the lease.
It's not a term of the lease that the tenant sell all of their property during that time period. And indeed.
But there was a requirement that the property be removed by the end of the lease, correct?
Right, as there is in just about every lease.
Right. Yeah. So to say that your client had, anyway, you can move on. I think you're right to focus on the statute. So let's talk more about what findings you think are clearly erroneous related to the 504B.271 claim.
Yes, well, as I said, it was clear that this was going to require more time, and we just never got a chance to start. The court focused on some issues that I think drew its attention away from the fact that we made that very simple demand that 504B.271 requires, and there was no point in time where the landlord fulfilled its responsibility under that statute.
Well, I'm just looking at the order, and I have to tell you, I'm very literal. So I look at specific findings of the court, and I'm trying to understand what you are claiming is clearly erroneous here, because that's the standard of our review here of these findings. And I look at finding number 22, and basically, if I had to summarize it, no request was made by your client from July 21 to 27, 2016. Is that finding clearly erroneous? Is there anything
that finding that is not clearly erroneous?
All right, and but then if I go to the finding number 28, and there is no request in late July to August of 2016, is that finding clearly erroneous?
The tenant did attempt to access the premises during that time, and the locks had been changed, so my client had no access at that point.
The tenant or the tenant's daughter?
The tenant's daughter and an employee of the tenant.
But here I'll read it to you. So it says, at no time during the negotiations between Rooney and Anderson that took place in late July and early August 2016, did Rooney, I assume that was your client's attorney, request that General G's have access to the property to recommence operations or even to remove inventory. Is that finding clearly erroneous?
There's nothing in the record saying that Mr. Rooney requested the inventory. However, the court went the other way and said that's abandonment. Now, for abandonment, and that's an affirmative defense that was never pled, but the court found that on August 1st, 2016, the tenant abandoned the property. Abandonment requires, it's like waiver, it requires a positive intent to abandon.
Counsel, I understand your argument on that point, but don't you think the court was focusing on the term abandoned as used in 504B.271?
And how do you mean?
Well, in terms of whether the property was, or whether the tenant had abandoned the premises, it wasn't in terms of an affirmative defense, but in terms of the language of this statute.
It's clear that the tenant never abandoned the premises. The tenant was forced out. But the word abandonment does not change in that statute. It's still an affirmative defense that would have to be pled, and it's still an affirmative act that you have to have intent for. My client never had an intent or never displayed an intent. In fact, the opposite is true with Mr. Rooney's discussions, where he was talking about Mr. Janiveris being able to sell that personal property.
Except the lease ended on July 31st, and your client hadn't removed the property by that date. So pursuant to the lease at that time, the property became abandoned.
But my client also knew that before that time, the locks had been changed. So my client had no actual ability to access the premises. So if they'd wanted to and were prepared to, there was nothing they could do. So why would they make preparations?
Request for a key from the landlord?
There was not an offer either. My client knew that they had no access.
Well, look,
why couldn't you call? Why couldn't your client call and say, hey, it looks like the locks have been changed. I want to get to my property. Can you let me in?
They did have a conversation. There was no offer made by the landlord.
Question. The question is whether or not that their request had been made, not whether an offer had been made, but whether the request had been made.
Right. I think that the parties knew each other, and I think the attitude that was being displayed by the landlord was clear that they were not going to give access. That attitude is displayed clearly in the correspondence.
I'm sorry. Did you finish?
Yes.
Go ahead.
But isn't it true that your client didn't give a key to the landlord, and so the only way the landlord could get in was to go in, you know, and change the locks, because the landlord didn't have a key to access the premises, even though the lease required it.
And my client says
required that, your client to give a key to the landlord.
Yeah, my client says that there was never a request made for that key. Testimony at trial was that the landlord just wanted to get in and force the tenant out. That's why he broke in.
But don't we defer to the district court's determination regarding credibility?
In that case, you would, but that's the explanation.
Okay, thank you.
And I know you're representing today that your client never was never obtained access and never was permitted to remove the inventory. But I'm looking at finding 31, which says on August 26, 2016, your client's attorney proposed that General G's remove its inventory on August 31, 2016, requesting a response by August 29 so it could arrange for trucks and personnel, and that Twin Town replied timely on August 29, requesting assurances that all inventory would be removed from the property by the August 31 date. Is there anything clearly erroneous about that finding?
It's not a clearly erroneous finding, but the demand that my client remove everything by the 31st when they were getting access on the 31st is unreasonable. There's no allowance in the statute for the landlord to say you have a limited time to take out your property, less time than is reasonable to remove what property is in there. And that's what the landlord was attempting to do to the extent that they were trying to limit that time. But really, the request was just to say, is everything going to be out? And the response was, yes, we're going to take everything out. Okay. That's what the statute allows and requires.
Thank you, Counsel. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel, for responding, you have 15 minutes.
Good morning. May it please the court. John F. Mulligan. I'm the attorney for the respondent, Twin Town Properties, LLC. The fact background of this case, which you are all familiar, goes back to May 2015, where there was an original eviction action. And as part of that settlement, there was an agreement that the tenant, General Jays, would vacate on January 31st, 2016. There was a 5-month period where they were already getting notices of fire code violations due to the issues with the inventory and arrangement in the store. So they set a date for January 31st, 2016 to get out. That date came, and the tenant requested an additional 6 months to liquidate the store. The landlord was aware of the state of the store based on the fire code violations and from visiting the property, and agreed to give them an additional 6 months because cleaning out the store would be a tremendous, tremendous amount of work and a tremendous burden. By July, nothing had happened, and the store had continued to receive fire code violations. And so the landlord was put in a very unenviable position of not being able to get a hold of the tenant and being threatened revocation of the rental license. And so they changed the locks and commenced an eviction action to try and take control of the situation. And the resulting litigation stems from that. The landlord was simply trying to resolve a situation that had been a problem from May 2015, where the tenant had taken no steps to resolve it. It was left with very few good options. Eventually, they commenced a district court action to attempt to get an order to liquidate the property under 504B.271. So it's a strange scenario where a tenant is claiming a violation of a statute while the landlord is also claiming to try and get it enforced, the statute, to just get a resolution and dispose of the property. It was clear from the factual background of the case that the tenant was either unwilling or unable to resolve the issue and clear out the property from the store as was required by the lease.
Counsel, let's focus on the alleged violations of 504B.271 subdivision 2. And I'd like to specifically discuss the September 8th letter. You're familiar with that, I assume.
Yes, I believe so.
What I'm referring
to,
it's exhibit. I believe it's exhibit 108 or 109, where there's a a written letter from Mr. Kennedy to requesting that requesting an opportunity to remove property from his personal property from the premises, and asking that his client retake possession of his property at 2 p.m. tomorrow on September 9th. And can you tell me what response there was to that? And well, first of all, can you let me know what response there was to that by your client?
That I am not 100% sure on, Your Honor. I mean, to provide context, at this point, the landlord had been requesting the tenant to remove the property since May of 2015. Since they had to retake possession of the premises through an eviction action and gaining access to address the fire code violations, there had been over a month's discussion of how to get the situation resolved. At no time during that discussion did anyone indicate in any sense that the tenant had the ability to actually remove the property and clean out the store. It was mostly a request for additional time to keep selling it, which had been occurring since May of 2015. So there'd been two rounds of six-month extensions to try and clear out the property. Granting additional time after two six-month extensions didn't seem prudent, and it didn't seem that that would be a solution to the problem. So
is that at that valid point, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, at that point, the parties may have been talking past each other because there had been discussions for so long. If my client had believed that they were actually ready to come and clear out the property, they would have gladly helped them do so, but that never occurred. They had access to the property for many months, even after my client filed a motion to get some resolution of what to do with all of this inventory. And when the tenant appeared in court as part of that motion, they declared they didn't want it and weren't going to remove it.
Is that September 8th letter a valid request under 504B.271 subdivision 2?
I don't think it's technically defective in any way, but in the context of everything that occurred, it didn't seem genuine or credible. There had been discussions about coming to bring trucks, and when the response was, all right, let's get some details of that, the response was, well, how about we get an extension through December to continue selling out the property, which is what was basically proposed all the way through, and it was the third request to do so. And at trial, it was admitted by the tenant that that was the intention all along, to just gain an additional 6 months. And, you know, if that had been allowed to proceed, I think it never would have been resolved.
Okay, thank you. You can proceed.
And so the appeal creates some difficulties because we seem to be basing our arguments on a different set of facts. The trial court made detailed findings after multiple days of testimony about the facts surrounding the circumstances of the case. It's clear that the tenant disagrees with those findings, but I haven't seen any. The trial court's findings were supported by the evidence and the exhibits and the testimony adduced at trial, and they're not clearly erroneous. And the legal conclusions of the court are justified based on their factual findings. So I see no grounds to either grant a new trial or to completely reverse many of the factual findings of the trial court and then apply legal conclusions regarding conversion and civil theft to a substantially different set of factual findings. One of the issues was valuation, which I think was a major, driver of the extended litigation that occurred. The landlord, Twintown, had contacted numerous individuals to view the property or see if they could find a buyer to try and resolve this situation, find someone that wanted the inventory and could sell it and take it and remove it. And there were very few takers, and the tenant at trial discussed that his options of removing the property were to sell it to the individuals that were the only two individuals to make an offer on the property, and that was Jim Erickson of ran a military surplus store, as did Rick Michael. And their offers were approximately $4,500 and the $7,500 that it was eventually sold for. So the contention that it was worth $1.2 million just isn't substantiated by any third parties or by any evidence that was produced at trial. And it just the variance of that, I think, was a great impediment to getting some sort of resolution to the case, short of a multi-day trial and litigation for a year, and now an appeal.
Well, could I ask you, I mean, the main claim that's being made here is that your client failed to comply with the requirements of 504B, 0.271. What facts are in this record that you believe support that your client did comply with those requirements?
Well, the landlord had been in discussions about how to resolve this issue with multiple attorneys for the tenant through weeks in July and August. I understand that there's a contention that, you know, after months of discussions, that they made a demand to visit the property on the 8th and that they appeared and no one was there. That may be a technical violation of the statute, but 504B.271 is designed as a mechanism to give tenants access to their property to retrieve it, and we don't want landlords, you know, simply throwing out residents' property after an eviction action or after they abandoned the premises.
Well, let me ask you this.
Sure.
When were the requirements of 504B.271 triggered? Aren't there some timelines that become effective?
Right.
Here?
So there's
so
a 20-day.
When do those days start?
Time limit. I believe the writ of recovery was issued on July 27th, which I believe would start the 28-day time period. But really, the totality of the circumstances, they made a demand to access the property. They did, in fact, access the property on multiple occasions in October and had months and months and months to remove their property. I'm not aware of any cases under 504B.271 where a tenant had months of opportunity and actually did go and visit the property and remove certain items. And the landlord was found liable. I mean, these are fairly unique circumstances in that normally removing a tenant's property doesn't involve multiple semi-trailer loads full of inventory to do so. there were multiple rounds of discussions about how to resolve this issue. There were discussions about coming with trucks, and those were quickly withdrawn and changed back to, all right, let's get a 6-month extension. At that point, the landlord filed the lawsuit to try and get some district court intervention. So 504B.271 is designed to give a tenant access to the property. It's undisputed that they had access to the property. It's undisputed that the landlord wanted the property removed. From the beginning of the discussions, there were emails stating that, you know, we know the inventory is, you know, important. It's been part of your business for many years. But to us, this is a huge liability. We need to come to some resolution. And this has been after months and months and months of negotiations to try and give them time to sell it down and reduce the scope of the problem, and it just didn't happen. So I would only conclude to say that all these issues, you know, involve context and credibility, which the trial court was in the best position to observe and make determinations on during the course of the trial. The factual findings by the court were detailed and they were substantiated by the evidence and the exhibits and the testimony produced at trial. They're not clearly erroneous, and the court's legal conclusions are supported by their fact findings.
Counsel, can you briefly address appellant's argument about your failure to raise the abandonment as an affirmative defense?
The abandonment issue was raised as part of the initial motion to present the court the 504B.271 issue. We were essentially arguing that after 28 days, and it had been 28 days with no removal by the tenant, even after having multiple opportunities to do so, the property had to be considered abandoned. Even if they continued to assert that they wanted the property, they wanted access, they never removed it. They never took steps to remove it. So the demands for access, it's not entirely clear what would have been gained by additional opportunities to, I guess, view it. I'm sorry, I'm not...
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Counsel for Appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. The time period for the 28 days did not start when the writ was issued on July 27th. It started when the writ was posted, when the eviction occurred on August 23rd, 2016. All of the four demands were made within that time. Mr. Mulligan stated that the issue about trucks was withdrawn, the offer to have trucks there. It was not withdrawn. What was stated on August 30th in an email was that my client cannot keep trucks and men on standby, hoping that your client will comply with a notice, wanting some affirmation that we could actually get into the premises. We were ready to go, but... it was clear we were going to get no access.
Did you have contracts in place with a moving company?
We had no contracts, but we had made contact, meaning we knew who to call if we were told that we could get in. But we hadn't actually hired anybody because we didn't know if we could get in.
But you thought you could get someone to be there the very next day?
We asked for two days.
Or 2 days. You thought you could. Originally, you asked for 2 days, and then on September 8th, I think you asked for 1 day.
Yes, the
latest pursuant to the statute.
The two latest requests were more with the statute in mind, saying we don't want them complaining that it didn't comply with the statute, so let's hit the nail right on the head.
So let's talk specifically. So on August 29th, did you have a company that you had contacted that could be available on August 31st?
I had a company that I had contacted. I've moved other things, so I've talked to contractors before. I was right in the middle of moving my office and making preparations for that. So,
how many workers were they going to have available for you?
Actually, the workers would not come so much from the company with the trucks. It would come from Mr. Janiveris. So when we actually did the inventory, we had 10 or 12 people show up to do the inventory. These were past employees or people he had helped along the way.
Well, could I ask you, because, again, I want to get to what finding here is clearly erroneous. And are you claiming, then, that the judge's finding 32, which says, which talks about, you know, that Kennedy responded later that afternoon, removal would take more than one day and more than one semi-trailer load to move. And the response then, and then there was a counter proposal to let him remain on the property till December 16 to sell the inventory. And that counter proposal was apparently turned down, and it was kind of an about face from the first proposal, which was, I want to come pick up my inventory. I'm paraphrasing, but are you claiming that finding is clearly erroneous?
Well, the emails speak for themselves, but the finding that that was a withdrawal of the demand for access, I think, is erroneous. And I will note that in characterizing this, we're not, there are findings of fact that we disagree with, but even given the findings of fact that the court made, our problem is that the legal conclusions were wrong about what the meaning of those facts were. So when the court was talking about abandonment, that's drawn off of what there was discussed in terms of, you know, did you have a truck ready? But that was not part of a claim that was actually made. That was just semantics of what was going to happen and how this would all work out, what the emails meant. 504B.271, the court made the findings that we made the demands, and that in particular on that one September 8th, there was no response. That right there, that sole incident is exactly the statute's purpose, to have a demand that was not responded to, we had no access. Right,
but September, there. But September 20th, they did respond back saying you can have unconditional access. Does that change the equation at all?
It changes the equation in a couple of ways. First, it shows how able the landlord was to allow the tenant to remove property. It was never a problem for the landlord to do that. They could have done that at any of these times. It didn't matter about how much time it took. That's a phony issue that's been introduced.
Well, but before that, the parties were trying to negotiate how much time. And then at that point, the landlord finally said, okay, fine, you can just come in, get your stuff out. So before that, why is that a phony issue? Because before that, the parties were negotiating back and forth, making offers and counter proposals and rejecting those. So at that point, landlord said, fine, okay, just come in, get your stuff.
Again, it's not an issue that the landlord can negotiate. The landlord cannot artificially limit the amount of time that the tenant needs to take out their property.
Well, but wasn't that part of the negotiation beforehand of how much time? Because I think you asked in an earlier email, you wanted to have until end of, essentially until the end of the year to clear out everything, right?
That was a different proposal, to let the store reopen and extend the lease.
Right. But so why isn't this part of those ongoing discussions and negotiations?
Because the statutory requirement is that we make a demand for access and that the landlord grant that access. There may have been a discussion about a different idea of letting the store be open, but for that idea of asking for the access, we made that demand and it was not granted. We made it again, it was not granted, etc. The landlord has that responsibility. The statute does not make an exception if there's a lot of inventory. There's nothing saying that's not contemplated within the limits of the statute, that it may take more than one day. The landlord may have to make access available more than one day, but we never got to the first part. The landlord's later reversal saying, yes, you can have access, was solely because they got sued. They were caught, and they said, oh, we have a huge liability that we don't want to face up to, so that's why they made the property available at that time. But at that time, it was too late. All the liability had attached.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both for your arguments and your briefing. We'll be issuing an order within the 90-day statutory time frame. Thank you both.